Good morning. Thank you, all of you. First of all, I want to thank to my co-authors from the National Research Nuclear Center of Israel and the European Synchrotron. Without them, it could be possible this research in progress. This is the outline of my presentation. I'm not going to try to convince you the importance of the composite materials, which enables us to have larger panels in the aeronautics industry, but at some point we have to join it, and usually fastener is the common option. This includes spots and holes, which are a stress concentration and give us problems in the structures. Some researchers try to look for where the damage appears and develop as the load is applied, trying to take pictures. I don't know if I can. No. Okay. Where the spots in the exterior edges appears and in the holes, and it develops, and trying to capture it doing numerical simulation. The question here arises when how good or bad are these evolving damage. In a prior working, we try to analyze the compression behavior of open hole Gouffin specimen changing the off-axis loading. And we found a very different behavior when the path of the load path changed with the material orientation. Using a little bit more effort on the strain rate effect. And we can see a clear effect on the strain rate effect on this type of loading. But of course, all of this work only captured the exterior edges of the specimen. We can only do the IC analysis of the exterior of the specimens. So this is the motivation of this work, which is how the interior damage develops and how can be translated into our predictions. So, to do so, the objective is try to do in situ dynamic compression testing. And to do that, the only facility that we found is the synchrotron, the European synchrotron, and try to expand the previous work into different CFRP architecture, tape and Gouffin, different layups, and open and filled hole configurations. So, we have a large amount of work. In the ID19 hatch of the synchrotron facility, we were able to put a split Hawkinson pressure bar with some signal recording and some control synchronization. As soon as the control synchronization gives the signal to the synchrotron, it starts to pushing the X-ray flux into the scintillator. The scintillator gives us a visible images that we can record with a Shimatsu camera, taking photos at 1,000,000 frames per second, more or less. The disadvantages of this high-speed camera is that only 128 frames can be taken. So synchronization is a crucial task in this type of experiments. So once we have the X-ray flux, we send the signal to the projectile, producing the pulse into the incident and the transmitted bars, giving us the signal of the strain gauges, and all of this is taken into the control sink in order to have a proper synchronization. Using this configuration, we can have two different configurations. The first is the frontal pictures of the images. Here you can see a sample, and clearly the hole is located at the center of the images. And we can have also a lateral view of the sample. This lateral view is only possible in the open hole specimen, as the metal of the pin is not transparent to the X-rays. This is a picture of the overall setup. I only want to highlight the specimen size, which is 20 by 10 millimeters size, and the hole is 2 millimeter of diameter. As we are looking for the damage initiation inception, for us it's very it's needed to have a clear image. So the first image you can see how, as the X-ray of the synchrotron is very collimated and the magnets do very very good job, but even though we have a higher intensity in the central zone and lower intensity zone areas at the other sites. And also you can see the scratch of the polishing of the scintillator. And when you finish this, the experiment, the X-ray hits the scintillator and gives us some random error. So you have a non-normalizing or non-flat images of in the specimen. So doing a normalization, we can have clearer images, which allows us to locate better the damage inception. We can do the same for the lateral view of the experiments. Just remember that we have the loading as the orange arrows are plotted here. So, for the sake of the time of this presentation, I'm going to focus on the cross-ply configuration and the quasi-isotropic configuration for the open hole specimens. So, all the setup is done, and we arrive to this type of data. To stress, to strain in the sample, doing one wave theory in the Hopkinson bar, and we have this type of images. These are normalized, and in this case, for the cross ply, you can see how, or maybe, at this area, it is clearly noted that the cracks appear perpendicular to the load path in this cross ply application. But as we have a good synchronization between the loads and the camera, we can have a zooming and a highlighted spot into the peak forces. Prior to the peak force, we are not able to see nothing at the sample, but as we arrive in the frame 71, the peak load starts appear a crack in the exterior edges in the upper part of the hole. I think it's a frame after it's clearly noted that it develops. If we continue in the time, the damage goes up and it takes around four frames and starting in the bottom part, doing as the unloading path of the stress time or the stress strain curve. It is faster in this case, but as the other part, it's not withstanding any load. If we take the same configuration, cross-ply configuration, but in this case in the lateral observation, in this case, it is noted how it is the formation of the Kim band and the developing of the damage. Focusing, doing the same analysis that we have been done for the frontal views, as soon as the Kim band appears in the bottom part, in a few frames more, or in a very tiny second, the Kim band appears in the upper zone and producing the unloading of the sample and the final failure of the specimens. So we move now to the cross quasi-isotropic orientation. In this case, the fracture path is more tortuous because of the the inner end light sequence, and you can notice that the fracture path appears not only perpendicular to the load path, but also in the 45 degrees. So doing the same analysis, we see that, as in the other case, the failure appears at the beginning of the peak load, and it develops quickly to the exterior edges of the sample. But in this case, it takes longer to reach the unloading of the stress curve. The question here arises: why it is taking longer to unload the stress? So the answer can be given with the lateral views of the same specimen. In this case, as in the others, the damage appears in the hole at the beginning of the peak load, and it's continuing developing through the thickness of the laminate. But in this case, there is not a sudden failure of the specimen. The upper part of the specimen is withstanding load and giving us a wider peak load than in the cross-splice configurations. So this leads to the conclusion of my talk. We have capable to produce a singular experimental setup in the European synchrotron. And compare, in this case, the cross-ply and the quasi-isotropic specimens during the dynamic load compression. Thank you very much.
Do we have any question?
I guess the sort of idea of these experiments would be to see sort of rate effects.
Yeah.
But if you look at the load curves, you have dynamic curves, you seem to have a lot of inertial oscillations in your specimens. So, I mean, or is it really relevant, the results, to say anything about rate effects, since it seems like you also had inertial effects at the same time, which actually affected the load. So how can you use these? And for example, how do the sort of failure behavior compare to just a normal compressive static testing of the same geometry?
Yeah, I agree with you that doing dynamic and inertia, it's together always, so it is impossible to decouple this type of experiments. And take into account that the hatch sizes, it's rather smaller than a common laboratory, you should have smaller bars, so you don't have a long pulse, and you can't use enough pulse shaping to avoid this oscillation that you have, that we have in our lab. We have larger bars and everything is better. So to arise to your question is, how can we use this data into real scenario comparing with compressed quasi-static compression? We are trying to compare, because I didn't show it, but in this setup we also use visible light, visible mirror, in order to have also the DIC. So DIC images also are combined with the X-ray images, and we are trying to do or repeat the experiments in our lab in compression and with larger bars in order to try to avoid these disadvantages of the smaller bars, and trying to understand better what is happening here.
Yeah. Okay, I think we should move on to the next speaker. So let's thank Jesus again.